All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up a little bit later on today in the noon hour, Dayton Hughes, former Chiefs wide receiver. Of course, you hear him on the call this Sunday night on 96.5 The Fan with Mitch Holthus, Josh Klingler, Dan Israel. Looking forward to get Dayton's perspective on the wide receivers after 2 weeks now into the season. Plus, get his perspective on what he's seen from Travis Kelce. So much has been made nationally in particular about his lack of production. What's so funny, you would think this has been going on for 10 weeks. It's 2 weeks, and he was a penalty away from having still 50 yards and a touchdown, maybe. So that whole stuff is crazy to me. We'll talk to Dana about it.
I can't remember which bet it was last year, but you probably remember I had one bet earlier last year where I was like, I'm betting 10 units. And you're like, are you insane? And I felt so confident in the bet that I was like as bullish as I've ever been. That's how I feel about Travis Kelce's over this week. That's how I feel about Travis Kelce's over yardage. It is below 50. That's offensive. That is an offensive number. The Falcons just gave up the entire middle of the field to the Eagles. Do we not watch the game? I'm offended for Travis. He should have been over his number last week. I understand he didn't get it. But this week in particular, that it's down to like 47.5, I won't stand for it.
Yeah, it's going to be, it feels like a Sunday Night Football is a perfect opportunity for him to kind of have that big game again, national stage, national audience, kind of shut people up. We'll see. Both tight ends could actually, Kyle Pitts and Travis Kelce perhaps, could have some big numbers based off of how both teams, frankly, have looked against tight ends to start this season. So we'll get to the Chiefs in just about 10 minutes, actually, with Kingsley Suamataia and his performance, and no news yet on who the left tackle is going to be. We had Ross Tucker join us yesterday, and I want to play some of that again for you because he discussed what may not be as simple of a fix as some have presented. So we'll get to that in a bit. Well, we do have to start, of course, not only with the positive stuff of the Chiefs 2-0 start, but that means also where the Royals are at right now, which
was a real kick in the nuts last night, man. I'm not going to lie.
It was. For the last 2 days, we said, hey, it's very important to get the first two against the Tigers because you're going up against Skubal on Wednesday night. That happened. The Royals lost the first two. Now they've lost the entire series against the Tigers, and they have lost four in a row. They get swept in a series at home for the first time this season. Terrible timing for
bad
that.
Bad time for that.
Terrible
cool
timing.
That like, normally I'd be like, oh my God, all the way to September 19th? Nice work, Kansas City Royals.
They could have been in the first wild card spot today and bury the Tigers if they just took, you know, two out of three in this series. Mm-hmm. Now it is a full-blown sweat to the finish. The good news is they still occupy a wild card spot. There's also a team, Minnesota, that has to get passed before you get passed.
Who's playing worse baseball than them? They've lost 19 of their last 29 games.
But I get it. The sweat is on. Everybody's degree of confidence. You understand why people may or may not be panicking or whatever. Like, it's great that with 9 games to go, they occupy a playoff spot. But now it's you had a chance to make it a much easier final 9 games. No, this is going to be a sweat, and it sure looks like it's going to come down at minimum to one of the final 3 games. Maybe not literally the last game of the year, but if you thought that by the time they entered that Braves series, oh, clinched, good to go. No, I think they're going to have to win a game in that Braves series now.
I'm going to do the old compliment sandwich with all the bad stuff in the middle. First, they are still, as you mentioned, in a playoff spot, ahead of another team, still a 2-game lead with 9 games to play. They are still fully in control of their own destiny. And to be honest, other than the Tigers, everyone around them is playing like garbage too. The Orioles are not playing good baseball. The Twins are not playing good baseball. They are not alone in their inability to play bad baseball. So like, okay, that's a nice positive, right? I can feel good about it, at least on that end. The negative is, how did you let this happen? The Royals, based on the way these other teams played, could be looking at home playoff games right now. We could be talking about the wild card possibly coming to Kansas City. And honestly, it's because their offense has fallen apart. Like, that's what it is. The pitching, once again, is not the reason why they're losing this game. Sure, Alec Marsh got in some trouble last night, and I'm not saying he was great. But in the end, all you had to do was come through with, I don't know, a couple of hits in order to make it a game. I'll give Braden Turner credit. He's the one who did the math on it, but here's the current run of some of the Royals hitters outside of, including Bobby Wood Jr. Bobby Wood Jr., 16 of his last 73. He's only hitting 219, so he's in a bit of a slump. MJ, 7 for his last 49. DeJong, 7 for his last 47. Renfro, 3 for his last 24. Freddie, 10 for his last 57. Mikel Garcia, 9 for his last 45. They got two guys, hitting 200 or more in the last, 2 weeks. It's bad. The offense is bad. Now, I assume, even though they're without Vinny Pasquantino, I don't remember the offense being all this bad together at the same time. They still have some qualified hitters I would expect some things out of. The last good thing is Daniel Lynch is a stud in the bullpen. Maybe we can just, maybe Daniel Lynch can be the third guy out of the bullpen. Urseg, Bubich, Lynch. Is that crazy?
I'm not worried about that, though. That's the issue.
I told you it was a compliment sandwich. Yeah, I had to give you a nice thing at the end.
I'm not concerned about that right now. Yeah. Right now, it is an offensive issue. And they've just been inconsistent the last month of the season. We know the 7-game losing streak they had. Then they had a stretch where they looked good again. And now they're back into a funk. They've lost 4 in a row. Off day today. Thank goodness. This is one of those where you're
need it.
You need to reset. You get the Giants coming to town who are way out of things, although they just look good against the Orioles. But as you acknowledge, the Orioles are playing some of the worst baseball of the entire season at the wrong time for them. And I know the sky seems like it's falling in Kansas City, but thank goodness the Twins and the Orioles are also losing. Where I will really get nervous is if suddenly there's not a gap between the Tigers and the Royals, as in the Twins get surpassed by the Tigers, but then somehow the Twins end up winning a few games. Because remember, the Twins get the Orioles the last week of the season. What's dangerous about that, even though they're not playing well, Baltimore could have the top wild card spot locked up before the end of the season.
Yeah.
Like the 3 games to go.
They could.
And so the Orioles, much like we discussed the Royals wanting to set up the rotation, they're not going to have that luxury anymore. The Orioles might. And so the Twins could be going up against an Orioles team that kind of throwing in the towel a little bit because they have nothing to play for.
Because they only have scary. 1 starter they really like and 2 they maybe kind of like. So they will want to use those guys in a wild card series.
So 9 games to go. 3 against the Giants, 74 and 78 team. 3 against the Nats, who are 68 and 84.
They stink.
3 against the Braves, 82 and 70. You're probably going to catch Chris Sale in that final series. They're battling for a wild card spot. It sure feels like, I understand the combination of Giants and Nats, but just because of a current 4-game losing streak, it feels like this weekend might actually be the deciding type of weekend to me for this team. If this team takes 2 out of 3 against the Giants, I think they're totally fine, and we can all take a deep breath again. If this weekend goes south and they lose 2 out of 3 to the Giants, knowing then they would have 3 against the Nats and 3 against the Braves, and at that point they're probably only a half game up against the Tigers or something. That's when it gets really, really dicey.
It's based
off of where the Tigers are trending. I know you brought up the numbers yesterday.
Oh, Tigers are playing great.
Where it's like, hey, well, they got to go 8-2 or 7-3. They've got 9 out of their last 10 with a win. So the Tigers might just keep this thing rolling, man.
They might, but it's the same problem just as long as you can play 500 baseball. That's what we talked about with them winning. If they could win 2 out of 3 this weekend, then I do think that they're a lock to the playoffs. Same problem. They go 4-5, which means they'd only need to win 2 of their final. If they win 2 out of 3 this weekend, they'd only have to win 2 of their final 6 games in order to force the Tigers to go 7-2. And I understand that they are playing at a rate that would suggest they're capable of that, but it's still a big ask. It just is, because it's baseball, and all it takes is one little hiccup, and their schedule is just as difficult. It's actually more difficult than the Royals down there. I'll say this. We're probably kind of big Orioles fans. Like, I know that you want that number one wild card spot, and you want these games at home, and technically, you were pretty much as close to them. It's a half game difference. You're as close to them as the Tigers are to you, which means it could go the other way. The thing I hate the most is what you mentioned. We're now staring at the possibility of it's going to take Lugo. It's going to take Reagans. It's going to take Singer or Waka. It's going to take some combination of those guys in the final series against the Braves in order to just get in the postseason. And if it takes them, that means Reagans could get pushed to being the, or Lugo could get pushed to being the third starter in a 3-game wild card series, and you can't even be guaranteed that game. So you might be looking at a possibility of not getting to the best version of yourself. I know that this is a lot to ask, because it is. But offensively, they desperate, and like, honestly, they've been counting on them all year, so it seems unfair to ask them now versus just ask somebody else in the lineup to pick up the slack. They need Bobby and Salvi to return to midseason form. For the final, I'm asking for 9 games. For 9 games, I need July Bobby hitting 600, slugging dingers in the home run derby, off the charts, Bobby. That's what I need for the next 9 games. And they're walking him, so it's gotten harder than ever. But that's what they need out of Bobby and Salvi in particular over these next 9, because the offense is still the way bigger concern for me.
It is.
Than what they've gotten out of the rotation.
It is, and ultimately, we talk about moments, superstars. He is one. Him and Salvi, you know, those guys have to step up. In any sport, we talk about the big moments, and usually those guys step up, and they have throughout the season. Now's another moment over these next 9. I am with you. Hell, Bobby didn't have to hit 600 in the next 9. He needs to be hitting 350. You know what I mean?
Like, not 219.
He didn't have to be hitting 600. Obviously, I would like that. But if all of a sudden Salvador Perez and Bobby for the final 9 games got hot and were hitting even over 300 during that stretch, I think that might get it done. I mean, Salvi overall, if you look at what he's done, he's basically been the same type of player the entire season. Bobby has had these moments where he is crazy stuff, right? Crazy, crazy numbers. He's gotten a bit of a lull here. And yeah, his job has gotten tougher because there's not the support behind him. We talked about not having Vinny yesterday. We don't have to rehash the whole conversation, but it's very, very clear more than ever what they miss with his bat not in the lineup. And it has just really stood out during these 2 losing streaks they've had. Now, if you add the 2 losing streaks together, during the last month or so, or since the Vinny injury, they've had, 11 game stretch of losses together at some point. That's what's brutal for them right now. The one thing that is, in a weird way, we focus on the offense, but because their starting pitching has still been pretty damn good, that's where I'm still like, just get in the damn dance, and I think
just see what happens in the playoffs.
Well, I think they can take a deep breath once they know they have it clinched, and maybe this off day helps them do the same thing. But when you know you're in the dance right now, I would imagine they're feeling the pressure a little bit. You get in the playoffs, and I think there's a chance you can breathe again. And at that point, maybe you play a little looser, and maybe we see them just go out and play ball. I think there's a chance that you're starting to feel the pressure if you're those guys in the locker room at this point, based off of knowing, hey, you have positioned yourself so well the entire season to make the playoffs. You're still in a playoff spot as it sits with 9 to go. You can't blow this. And there's pressure involved with that. They know it as well. Like, you can't let this thing slip up.
Is it weird that I still disagree with the notion that they're going to look at this bad team backing their ass in the playoffs? Like, backing in. They've had a playoff spot for 3 months.
Correct.
They've been in a playoff spot for 100 days. What do you mean back in? But now look, you could say the Tigers are taking a charge or some version of it, but I completely disagree, fundamentally disagree with the idea that the Royals are backing into the playoffs. Playing good going into the playoffs? Well, we can have a different argument there because they're definitely not doing that.
Other than the Tigers, who really is? We go back to the conversation we had.
The Yankees and the Tigers throughout. The only teams
Yankees have won 3 in a row. The Tigers, of course, have won 4 in a row. And as we referenced, 8 out of their last 10, I guess it is. And the Yankees have won 7 out of their last 10. There's not a dominant team still. Yeah, the Tigers are playing like a dominant team right now, but there's not a dominant team in baseball, and so it still remains the same. Get in the dance. But we acknowledge the repercussions of losing the first 2 against Detroit, and here you are, and you've now lost 4 in a row. And so you truly could have buried them. We could be sitting here saying, man, you're only a game out of the top wild card spot with 9 to go, feeling all that was right there for them. And it's a team that's been really good at home. And yet they just got swept at home for the first time. So they have to salvage this thing. 3 left at the K. Hopefully not the final 3 of the entire season at Kauffman. It looks more and more like they're going to have to go on the road for the playoffs if they make it for the first series.
Yeah, it would appear that way.
So obviously I hope we get a chance for home playoff games, but that's probably going to have to happen in the ALDS if they're fortunate enough to make this. But right now, like, I guess final pulse from everybody on the text line, 913-586-7965. We know what's ahead. 9 to go. We know the opponents. We know how the team's playing. Call your shot. Where are you at percentage-wise? This team is making the playoffs. I can tell you where the so-called expert projections are at. The Royals are now, they're on 85 now.
Oh.
It dropped. We knew there was going to be a big swing after a loss yesterday. It was 93, and now it dropped to 85 on a couple of the sites. I still think they're got a 90% chance to make the playoffs, and therefore I would tell you they're making the postseason.
It'd be massively disappointing, obviously, at this point if it went the other way, and we'd have to have very different conversations. But for now, the playoffs started today, which is not a stupid conversation, on September 19th. If the playoffs were to start today, they'd be in a spot. They'd be ahead of the last team in a spot, and the Tigers still do have to make up the difference. They can't let their foot off the gas for even half a second based on how far they put themselves behind to start this. And after all this, this is what's funny, is 2 of the teams in the playoffs right now are going to be AL Central teams, and they always had a chance for a third. The almost
guaranteed now.
A fourth actually fighting for it. Isn't it crazy after all that? We talked about the AL Central. If you want to just know where the Royals are as a good team standpoint, we talked this entire time about like, well, the Royals' path to the playoffs is winning the Central because that division stinks. Not so much. Three teams are pretty much going to be in it. Some combination of Royals, Twins, and Tigers are going to be in it. Guardians are obviously going to win the Central. They got four of their five teams fighting for the playoff spot. Might help that everybody in the division got to take on the White Sox.
Doesn't hurt. Doesn't hurt.
That was probably not a bad thing.
12 games or 13 games, whatever it was.
Last night they lost in extras. The tweet from their official Twitter account just said, the other team scored more runs than us. Final. Yeah. That was it. I was like,
they're worn out. They're beat up. That's been a long year.
Tough social media.
Yeah, they lost to the Angels, I think, or whatever it was in extra innings yesterday. Did the Chicago White Sox. We'll get back to the Royals throughout the entire show today. But yesterday we had Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, former NFL offensive lineman on the show, and he was a perfect guy to have on because we wanted to get his perspective on what's happening at left tackle for Kansas City, where as of right this second, at least publicly, the team, including both Kingsley and Wanye, have said they're both preparing as if they're going to start Sunday night in Atlanta, which is a huge story. Again, we were both surprised that Andy wasn't asked about it yesterday, frankly. I guess we're going to have to wait till tomorrow for that. But we asked Ross his assessment. I want to play this again if you missed what Ross said about Kingsley's game and the confidence aspect of this entire thing.
Just body language. It felt like Kingsley was losing his confidence during the game. It's a really bad spot for an offensive lineman to be in. Really bad, and it's understandable. He's a young player. He's a rookie. First real taste of the NFL, and he's going against a guy in Trey Hendrickson who's very, very good. Now, I was a little bit disappointed and thought the Chiefs could have done more, especially early in the game, to help Kingsley, to help him settle in, to help him build some confidence. Because I do think he has the talent and athletic ability to be able to do it. But now you have to wonder where he's at mentally and whether or not they're better off going with Wanye Morris.
And that's something that I think you do have to have faith in Andy Reid and Andy Heck. They've been through this before with your young offensive linemen. They can tell if the confidence is, you know, completely shot or if it was, hey, frustrating game, shot on Sunday. He comes in this week. They're working with him, and he's fine. He is able to bounce back. Do they believe he's capable of doing that? And that's a determination they're going to ultimately make. I do think, and Ross pointed out, that both sides, right? There's a confidence issue one way or the other, whether or not he comes back and plays. Let's say he plays on Sunday night and he struggles again, then does that hurt him more versus not playing him? I think there's repercussions to both. When 2 weeks into a season, now three, I guess, you would pull a guy that had the competition in his favor the entire offseason, that quickly the organization would pull it. That would be, I mean, honestly, I really still would be surprised if they do that. Now, if he does start at left tackle, there's no way, right, at some point they don't have some opportunities to have P. Ryan's, you know, chip, as Ross laid out, or have Noah Gray help out a little bit.
I think that there'll be a lot of that. I think it's also a Hendershot got signed back to the practice squad because they might end up doing a heavier tight end thing. I think the story has been massively underplayed. This does not have 1 week repercussions. This has season-long repercussions. If after just two games you bench Kingsley Suamataia in favor of Wanye Morris, a man who had lost the job to start, well, then we're probably talking about a backup left tackle being your left tackle the rest of the season. Like, I'm not saying it could never switch back or injuries couldn't change the thing, but I think once you pull that ripcord, tell me how you put it all back into the jar. 3 weeks from now, you're like, well, in practice, he seems confident again, so here comes Kingsley. If Wanye is the starter on Sunday, I'll be honest, I'm assuming it's Wanye's job until injury takes it away from him. And that's a massive deal for this year, next year, a million other things.
Why would you do it?
I wouldn't do it already. It's too early to pull that cord. If you have to again in a fourth, like, look, you put him out there again, and he's getting worked over, and it's the fourth quarter, and it's close, and you feel the need, like they did last week, to pull the starter in order to get a win, well, then maybe you have come to that conclusion. But for week three, I actually think it'd be foolish to move away from Kingsley right now. Because if you were worried about his confidence before, how would you feel about it if all of a sudden, 2 weeks into being the left tackle starter for this team, you took the job away from him in favor of a guy who never had the job from him at any point this offseason.
Yeah, and the text line, we brought this up as well. They said, hey, they benched Juwan Taylor last year in week two. They did,
and but he started
the next week, and he got pulled due to the penalties, right? He had, I think, it was an insanely high number of penalties just in that one game alone, and they went back to him. So this is a little bit different. We're also talking about a rookie, not a veteran. So it's interesting that it happened in week two both years. Now, Ross Tucker also said, what would he do about the O-line and Kingsley? How would he play this out in the next couple days?
I would imagine, we'll see. They don't want to ruin Kingsley mentally, but I think you could ruin Kingsley mentally either way, right? You bench him, that's tough, he doesn't start. But if you throw him right back out there, and he struggles again, and then that's not good either. So they're in a unique situation there. The thing I would tell you is, you can scheme offensively to protect someone or protect a position. Now, you're going to lose some other things as a result, right? Like if you slide to the left tackle every time, well then, you know, Juwan Taylor and Trey Smith are going to be one-on-one, and the defense is going to know it, and that puts more stress on them. Or if you're going to have, you know, Kelsey or Samaje Perine chip, well, that helps, but then you're going to have a guy late getting out to his route. So there's a give and take with everything. I just think I would start that with securing the block for the left tackle before you worry about anything else.
That's the thing. When we discuss chipping, singularly applying that to Kingsley seems foolish. At this point, I think that this is just life. I don't care if it's Wanya or Kingsley. Either way, someone's going to need a chip. Why would the backup left tackle not need somebody helping him out on his side? Did he become a standalone left tackle with absolutely no problem? What the hell happened in training camp or any of these other drills or other opportunities?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that simple, though, either. Like, there might be other aspects of his game that he's not as good at. Who knows, right?
He's not as good of an athlete. There'd be less screen game, less pulling tackle stuff.
The good thing I still think for Sunday, one, I don't know about you guys, we haven't really talked pace of the game and script, et cetera. We'll do that more later on today and tomorrow about how we just see this game playing out Sunday night. I don't feel like this is going to be a shootout, so this could be more of a, you know, you're able to kind of control the game a little bit. I don't believe the Falcons are going to, you know, essentially force you to need to get to the 30s to win this game. I'll be stunned if this is a game that's 34-31. You know, this feels like a high teens, low 20s type of game just personally for this one. The other part is, they don't have Trey Hendrickson. That's the good news. You know, he is that special of a player on Cincy. Matthew Judon, he's a name. We all know the name. He's been a very nice player in the NFL. He's capable of getting a sack. He's not, to me, capable of destroying a game. Hendrickson is, TJ Watt is, you know, Micah Parsons, Chris Jones. These guys are capable of destroying game plans.
I think it was interesting, too, because before they made this decision, really, going into training camp, it was, I think, part of we had a conversation of, if it's 50-50, you give the job to Kingsley because chance for him to grow and learn through this process. Yeah. Where Wanya came in, had the illegal hands to the face, almost single-handedly lost the game because it went to 4th-and-16 before the penalty. So if you still feel that way in any way where, yeah, Kingsley, we want him to sit, but Wanya, he's not perfect either, like you were just saying, Cody, maybe you stick Kingsley in there again, you give him a little bit of help, and you just see how this week goes because, as you said, it's not Trey Hendrickson, and learning from that lump and that issue and rebounding from it, I think would show. Like, if he has a really good, say he has a really solid game, maybe
confidence builder. Yeah,
maybe he lets up one or two pressures, and Mahomes gets sacked. But for the most part, he actually is pretty good. That does way more than sitting him and just having him rest behind and learn.
I looked up the stats, by the way. The Atlanta Falcons have gotten the eighth least amount of pressure on the quarterback so far this year. So they're in the bottom 10. So
that's good.
You know, and Buffalo's in the bottom 10, a team they're going to face here pretty soon. And the Chargers are second to last. That's a team they're going to get next week. I got to be honest, feels like kind of a confidence building stretch. All of a sudden, when I start laying out the teams who aren't getting pressure, you'll be shocked to find out the Carolina Panthers are the worst in the league at this. Another team on their schedule. Why not just let Kingsley work through the problems? And at the end of the game, I actually kind of respect the decision. It's the end of the game, and we're trying to win it, and I'm sorry, but you can't cost us the game. Although Wanya almost did, by the way, with his own penalty, on which he put hands to the face that put them in 4th-and-16. Now, it did not cost him the game, but it could have, The other left tackle could have just as easily cost him the game. And so I just think when you're looking at it, there's no reason not to start him. It should be a bigger story, though, in my opinion, if you're already pinching your left tackle 2 weeks into the season.
And you haven't flat out said, you know what, we looked at the film. We're going back to Kingsley. Not like dragging it out, at least publicly. They may already internally, even though the players said they haven't been told if they're starting yet.
Sure.
This seems like tomorrow, 1 o'clock, he gets asked about it, he being Andy Reid. To me, that's not one of those where like, oh, we'll just see how the week. To me, that decision is going to be made tomorrow or by tomorrow.
I feel like if he.
I don't think we're going to have to wait till Sunday and just see who's out there. That'd be wild to me if we're like going into the weekend not knowing who the starting left tackle
is. I was
going to
say, if he says, well, we still don't know yet, that might be more of a problem.
Yeah, unless you think there's gamesmanship, but is there? I mean, that seems awfully like, you know, you're acting like you're guarding the nuclear codes at that point, and you're not, you know, if you're worrying about letting your opponent know who's starting at left tackle.
You know, it's I don't feel like that's going to dramatically change the Atlanta Falcons plan for Sunday night, but we'll see.
Give me an anytime Kingsley touchdown if he's not the starting left tackle.
Oh, you want him to get the touchdown? Oh, that's how they're going to get his confidence back. They're going to throw the same route to Wanya Morris, but to Kingsley.
That's
instead.
Right. And then he'll have his own dance with Worthy and Rice, and everything's good in Chiefs Kingdom.
I mentioned that with Ross Tucker yesterday when he was like, well, I mean, you got a guy getting, you know, a touchdown. Yeah. I'm like, but he can't get a touchdown if he's starting. They're taking away his other skill sets. A whole other problem.
You mentioned a couple of the upcoming opponents. Let's take a look at that a little bit and what it could tell us about the passing game. And I think we judge the Royals differently because of one thing. I'll explain what that is next. Back here on Cody and Gold, coming up in about 8 minutes, we'll get to one thing I think has changed with how we view the Royals, and it's the Chiefs' fault. Plain and simple. We'll get to that in just a little bit. You guys can hit us up on the Jays Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Reminder, tomorrow at this very time, 24 hours from now, we will have Drew getting his hair cut, his hair getting bleached.
I
like
almost
Joe
forgot
Burrow.
About that.
That's tomorrow 10:30.
Yeah,
I will text and get 100% confirmation, but I'm fairly certain. Randy and his wife, Rye, from Downtown Hair Lounge and KC Moe, are coming in studio tomorrow. It's going to happen. We'll have it on video. You ready?
Yeah.
You got a hat on today. No hat tomorrow.
I'm ready to get my hair cut. I've been needing it to be cut, so I'm excited to have the whole thing done, and there will be pictures. We'll have social stuff up. Yeah, it'll...
Get that bet paid off tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then Rob's going to have to sit in a studio that reeks of bleach.
I don't know how strong it'll be. Maybe get a fan in there.
It's happening in here?
Well, I mean, I think so.
I mean, I guess we could do it in here. We do need someone to run the board still. Although for that 25 minutes, maybe you're
whoever's in there is going to be.
I mean, in here, maybe we can have.
I'm
him
open
because
obviously the haircut can't be done in there. Obviously,
I just like the idea that
it could be done. Why couldn't it be done in here? We got room in these corners actually back here.
I didn't know if I don't know.
Sink though is closer to that area, and they need to rinse out the bleach.
Yeah, my thought is that it should be back there, but I'm pretty open.
Did say, please keep your head away from the board so we don't have hair on the board. The engineering's going to freak out just me mentioning that.
That seems
We'll
never do that engineering, please.
Yeah, understandably so.
Everything will be done and washed and cleaned out, and I will stand back here. Yes.
Okay. 24 hours.
Maybe that's what we need to do. Instead of C&G pizza, we just have C&G cuts, and we just have a listener each week come in and get a haircut live on the air randomly.
Should we make the fan club more of just like a... You know, you like hang out at the barbershop vibe instead.
Yeah. Just old fashions.
Old fashions. We can get a guy in here to do straight razor shaves or something.
There you go.
Make it real classy. But then it feels like we need cigars. Sports and smoking.
Is there a place called Sports and Scissors or something? You know,
it doesn't have
the same flow as like a scissors and scotch, you know, but sports and scissors and.
But you absolutely talk sports. The last time I was getting my hair cut, they were talking about UFC. You know, I mean, it's just kind of
I told you, I don't mind having a conversation when getting my hair cut. Our old producer, he wants it dead quiet. He does not. Remember, Nick, he did not want to have anybody talk to him. Him and I got our hair cut the same place for a while, unknowingly, and until we both were there the same day one time. And he was like, you talk the whole time? I'm like, oh, if they want to have a conversation, and it's also a barber that I know, yeah. He wants it dead quiet, no conversation.
I would prefer that.
Really?
Really? Mm-hmm.
If it's someone I don't know, then yeah. But if I've gone to the same lady, Sam, cuts my hair for quite some time now, like a year and a half, 2 years now. So we have a conversation.
If you don't know the person, I feel like you get a vibe after saying, hey, how's it going? People ask how your day's going. You tell them, and then at that point, if it... the conversation continues than it does.
Someone says, hey, dumbass, sports clubs exist. Fair enough.
But they don't give you alcohol there, see?
Fair enough.
We're combining all of the concepts.
Yeah.
And making it better.
Fair enough. That does exist.
Somebody's calling you out, Cody, saying you should take notes from me on paying off bets.
I give you credit, Drew. This bet is getting paid off quickly. With inside of a week, Cody is 2 years later hasn't paid off his bet.
That's the only bet I haven't paid off, though. Just one.
Yeah.
Other than that, I've paid off all my bets, which I think
so counts for something. That's tomorrow. You can watch on YouTube, Twitch, X, Facebook, all of that.
The cameras are following me. Then the camera is going to be on me then?
Yeah, we'll make sure that this... I think what we'll do is I'll create a new scene where you're on camera the entire time.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about the Chiefs for a little bit, though, because they have a couple matchups on the horizon that could tell us a lot more about this passing game the rest of the way.
And the entire offense, if we're being honest. Look, they face all of the teams on their schedule this season that currently rank best in defensive EPA per dropback and per rush. So they're facing some of the teams who are performing better defensively than pretty much anyone else in the league. What I like about it is it's a true test of what this offense will look like without Pacheco. And if last week is more an anomaly, or they're going to struggle like the rest of the league offensively all year. So Chargers are number one in pass defense and rush defense right now. The Steelers are number two in pass defense and number three on rush defense. And the Saints, who they face coming up on Monday night here soon enough, are third in pass defense and second in that. We're going to get a good sense of exactly where these teams are. Or you just think this is too small of a sample size.
Yeah, the Chargers, look who they've played. Who have the Chargers played so far?
The Panthers.
And
the Raiders.
The Raiders.
So that's
the Gardner thing. Minshew and Bryce Young. But that also tells us a lot about both teams. Are the Chargers really as good of a pass defense as we think? And up to this point, sometimes you can only do what you faced on schedule-wise. Yep. Chargers can't help who they faced.
That's fair.
And based on that, they're the number one defense in the league. Well, I would hope so. You face the Panthers and you face the Raiders, but they've held up their end of the bargain. You know how this works. You're not going to be the number one defense in the league if you don't at least handle your business against bad offenses. That's why I like this test a week from now when they take on the Chargers. And then, of course, in the upcoming next few weeks as we get in there, I understand it matters more than this week. Atlanta's been kind of a middling defense, so this first true test doesn't give us an idea here. But I'm a little worried that the league-wide offensive issues are going to apply to the Chiefs like they apply to everyone. And we can get into Mel Kiper later at 11 o'clock and his solution for this and some of the other solutions I've seen from people for this.
This is all an overreaction, though, isn't it? Like the general theme of where we're at with the yardage in the NFL and scoring being down, et cetera, and the way quarterback play is. Like, this is still, to me, an overreaction now heading into week three. And it's also just kind of a cyclical thing. We're in this window now for probably the next year or two where we might see offense come back to the pack, if you will. Defenses will catch up. Then there'll be some other correction. A lot of young, innovative offensive minds. There'll be some other correction that they make. And then all of a sudden, we're back to talking about that. Plus, hell, that might that could also happen in the next 4 weeks.
Aren't the Chiefs the most likely team to figure out how to go against this defense?
You got Mahomes and you got Andy Reid. Absolutely. Right there is the reason why.
They started doing it against them first, though, so I guess I would have thought this offseason they would have solved it. But a really good analytical breakdown pointed out that teams are doing something different. It's just not working. The offenses around the league all kind of unanimously, because they're smart about that, decided, hey, this is how we're going to attack this problem. Problem solved. And we're 2 weeks into the season, and it's like, oops, that plan's not working. And we're going to have to figure out a different way to attack these defenses now. And I think what we're running into is they have yet to solve it. And it's going to take a few more weeks. And of course, now for the Chiefs, no second wide receiver, no starting running back. We just mentioned all the left tackle questions. They got to get through some of their own personal problems before it's like, well, we're going to take care of everything you're doing to us. They kind of have to sort through their own stuff first, which is why the Saints and Chargers matchups each of the next 2 weeks, I think, become interesting for what this team can do against two defenses right now that do rank in the top five in the two most important categories, against the pass and against the run. I don't really care outside of that what's left, right? And those three teams, while they have not played some murderer's row opponent, I mean, the Saints did play the Cowboys.
Dak led the league in touchdown passes, didn't he, last year?
Yeah, so, I mean, they didn't face nobody. The Saints are just a tough one to figure out. Either I actually think they're a 12-win team and an actual threat in the NFC, or they just had two of the hottest weeks I've seen out of a team with a new offensive coordinator, and given some time and tape, they'll sort through what Kubiak's doing. Obviously, by the way, if you're copying things to do right now, copy Kubiak's plan, because he seems to be the only man whose offense is functionally working.
They're clearly better offensively than a year ago. They're clearly going to be that all year. The question is, to your point, all right, when's the correction and adjustment, and then what's their adjustment back to it? Because this is brand new. If you're someone that Saints division in particular, you haven't seen Derek Carr run that same offense that they're running now, and there's some adjustment with that. By the way, the Saints' upcoming games, Eagles, Falcons, Chiefs, Bucks, Broncos. That's what the Saints have on the horizon. Their toughest game, of course, in there is the Chiefs, but the Bucks playing a lot better than people thought as well. Baker Mayfield's been one of the most impressive. Baker Mayfield and Derek Carr have been two of the top three quarterbacks, essentially, in football.
Baker's been great.
Sam
Darnold, really Kevin nice. O'Connell. Yeah. We're going to talk about that. I'm sure Paul Charchian will want to bring up the Vikings when we have him on in the 1 o'clock hour today, our fantasy football guy.
I've been really impressed by Kevin O'Connell.
Kevin O'Connell's one of the bright young coaches in the league, and what he's done 2 weeks in with Sam Darnold, I think, is even more of an example of that.
They beat the Niners without Jordan Addison, too, because he was out. It was just Justin Jefferson. And of course, they don't have Hockenson either. Do you guys think that some of this, the whole too high thing, is almost highlighting the need for a good quarterback, where you mentioned, Cody, Patrick Mahomes is the guy that can solve that. He's the guy that can work through this. It's almost highlighting the bad quarterback play more than
down,
it is.
That's all.
Yeah, we'll get to that in about 30 minutes as well, too, around 11:15. We're going to talk more specifically, Drew, about that very point and something that a national commentator and analyst had to say about where things are at. But I was thinking more about the Royals. We all know 9 games to go, and I get the frustration, the concern, the worry, the panic, whatever phrase you want to use for what's going on. I think, though, in general, how we talk about the Royals, we judge them even harder because of the Chiefs, right? Not just because the Royals, it's been basically 10 years since they were a postseason team, 9 years since they were a postseason team. That always is going to make you view them tougher, be more skeptical.
Sure.
Totally get it. But I also think in 14 and 15, we all know that none of us, at least on this show, and given our ages, had seen a team in this town win a championship. And so at that point in time, just making the playoffs, let alone going on a run through the playoffs, like, that was an incredible thing. In this town now, just squeaking into the playoffs, which looks like what's going to happen if they get in, and I think they will, that's like not good enough for the KC sports fan anymore. Fair
because
or not. By the way, I get it. Like,
we're
with you. I totally get it. But we view them differently. We're used to our teams now going on long playoff runs. We're used to the Chiefs at least going to an AFC title game. Hell, even the 2 years the Royals did make it in the last 10 years, they were going to the World Series. So I just think we view that. When people are even more skeptical about this organization and the Royals I'm talking about, it's the past history. But it's also like, well, they're not good enough to go to the World Series anyway, so who gives a damn? I've seen that a lot from people, Cody.
Well, I think that, which is surprising to me, but this is actually funny enough. You're saying it's the Chiefs' fault? It's the Royals' fault. I am convinced the Royals, or the Chiefs, never take a chance on a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes if the Royals didn't finally force somebody in this town to not be mediocre. They showed the city, they showed the Chiefs what it's like to win. Weird. Right after that, they started being like, maybe we should get a quarterback. Maybe we should finally take a first-round quarterback for the first time since the mid-damn 80s, 40 years later. I don't think that's an accident. I think that eventually greatness does kind of force this. So, I think you're right. I think the way people view the Royals season is skewed based on how far the Chiefs make it every single year. And I would just tell you, this is the first year of relevance. And I so desperately have been asking for the Royals to be more like the Rays and less of a flash in the pan. Yeah, I obviously want the World Series titles. Yes, I want deep playoff runs. But you can't even have a chance at a deep playoff run unless you're in the actual dance more than once. And so for this year, I'll take a playoff berth. Yeah, I'd like the World Series and to win it all and all the glory and a million other things. And if you promised me a World Series win, would I take a guaranteed 10 straight years not being in the postseason? Sure. Why not, man? I guess I would do that, right? That's what I would end up in. But I just want them to be relevant. And so, I think people probably are being hard on the Royals as a result of that. Tough. With expectation, that's the way this lives.
You mentioned the going back to the draft in 17 and drafting Mahomes, what the Royals had done prior to that. And so that that pushed the Chiefs. And maybe that's true. I always push back on the anytime we reference a franchise and decisions they've made for 30 years in terms of not drafting a quarterback since Todd Blackledge in the first round and all that until Mahomes. I hear you. We've all acknowledged that. And I think there's some truth that, hey, it put pressure across the parking lot. I think there's some truth to that.
Just being like a regular
but also
team.
Like Brett Veach at the time, John Dorsey, but Brett Veach and John Dorsey, their decision in April of 2017 had nothing to do with the GM of record in Carl Peterson in 1999 or 2002
sure.
decision to not draft a quarterback in the first round. You know what I mean? Like, I hear you.
No, but over time, yes, I agree. But Clark, there has been one signaling post where Clark has been the man in charge this entire time. And I think Clark has more influence sometimes than we want to pretend. He's not Dave Tepper.
Thank God.
He's not getting in the damn way all the time. But I think when they bombed in the 80s, they were careful. They were really careful. They went with the safe one. Ooh, here comes Joe Montana at the end and Alex Smith and Matt. Like, let's get the veteran, the guy, Trent Green, the guy who's already won a little bit. And we don't want to stink. Stinking is the worst. Let's just hang in there and play tough and be a playoff team. They were a good team. They were a good franchise for a long time with no rings to show for it. I just think it's that like last push. Maybe it would have happened anyway. Sure. But when you go back to when all of a sudden the entire city's like, okay, the Chiefs are cool. And I'm not saying they weren't supporting them. Arrowhead was still selling out. But like the city fell in love with the Royals because of what they were doing from a championship basis. And they were like, maybe it's time. Like, it had been 40 years. I hope that they don't take, like, Mahomes retires 15 years from now. I don't, whatever. I'll say 15 so people don't get mad. 15 years from now, yeah. If, you know, or 20 years from now when Mahomes retires, I hope they take a first-round quarterback immediately. I mean, just look at the league. I don't know how many times we have to point this out to teams. You'd be like, well, but Brock Purdy. I'm like, shut up. I don't care for the one example of one good quarterback who got taken in the third. 20 or 25, without even looking at 20 of the starters in the league that are any good, and there aren't even 20, they're all first-round picks. So just don't waste your time next time. That's all.
913-586-7965, Jay Southland, Tow Service text line. Someone, and I saw this from a few people, they said their frustration with the Royals and how they view them this year in terms of judging them surrounds, they said, quote, the circus that is the request for a new stadium. I think there's probably a fraction of the fan base that is, upset with how that went down. My question for that would be, do you guys view those as the same? Like the success on the field that they're having this year, are you not enjoying it as much because you didn't like the plan in April? Clearly, I think there's some people. I think that's interesting, though, that you would let that cause yourself to maybe not enjoy or believe in the team this year. Because you didn't like how they handled the vote, or you think they don't need a new stadium, or whatever.
That has nothing to do with the players on the field, the coach.
I agree.
Those are, to me, completely separate entities. And I also think that the reasonable expectation train is tough because the Royals have been a very good team all year. They've been in a playoff spot all year. And I don't want to keep talking about last year because they are a dramatically different team. But you're talking about a team who is just getting into the winning phase, ideally. Like, just getting into it, just getting their feet wet in it. Look, if they go back next year and they're not a playoff team, well, then we can start talking about how they're not fulfilling the obligation of the continued winning that we're asking for out of the organization. But, like, this year, I'm just happy they're in the playoffs right now. I'll be happy if they're just in the damn thing. And, yeah, the Chiefs kind of ruin a little bit. Because the Chiefs, we've said before,
going for a three-peat. I mean, that's the other part. Look, the Royals are in a playoff spot with 9 to go, and hopefully we're talking heading into...
But they do have two of the best players in each sport, you know?
They do. They have superstars on both inside of both stadiums, no question. And hopefully next Tuesday, the Royals are still occupying a playoff spot with a couple games to go. But I think a lot of it is this year in particular. It's not just the lack of success prior to this year, but it's also when you do have a team that has garnered the full attention for the last 6 years, 7 years at Arrowhead, that is going for something that has never happened in sports. You know, not sports history, but pretty much football, NFL history. And therefore, I mean, this would be such an enormous accomplishment.
It already is because there's only a handful of teams who've done it. Speaking of terrible quarterback play, just out of curiosity, since we were talking about it and first round picks and Bryce Young just got benched, you got any guess who's benched next? I like the old odds of who's the next quarterback to be benched, because we're talking good quarterback play. Let's talk terrible for just a second. Bryce Young just got benched. Obviously, he was quite surprised by that, which I can't blame him for being. Isn't the maybe I'm wrong here. Isn't the obvious answer Will Levis? I think his coach openly hates his ass.
I'm glad you asked the question. I'm glad you asked the question. There are odds for this, of course.
Of course. I was like, I could see you typing, so you probably found him pretty quick.
Daniel Jones, next quarterback bench, 4-1.
Not Will Levis.
Bo Nix, 6-1, which makes no sense to me. They're not benching Bo Nix for
terrible bet.
Zach Wilson. What? Jacoby Brissett, 6-1. I could see that. Maybe. Because they have Drake May waiting. Will Levis is 8-1.
Who's his backup?
We looked this up the other day. Mason Rudolph, red nose. The whole Christmas Day.
I did make some money.
We said it was Christmas Day. Mason Rudolph's not losing on Christmas Day.
Well, I guess what I don't know if the category, since there's betting odds, if does benched mean
somebody else is starting,
or does this mean like middle of the game, like he's benched and it goes from there? Okay.
Start. Got to be start. I don't think it counts if Mason Rudolph comes in for like the
Justin
fourth
Fields,
quarter. Of a
Justin Fields
blowout.
Is 10-1. I think that's a great value bet. Like if. If all of a sudden he starts making mistakes, they could go back to
Russ. If Russell's healthy and he has 1-2 interception game, they wanted Russ to start anyway.
Deshaun Watson 10-1 to get benched. I just don't think they're benching him. So there's a lot of reasons why. Him getting suspended does not. You don't get your bet paid off if he gets suspended. That doesn't count as getting benched. Just so you know,
Levis makes the most sense, but Drew Lock is the backup, correct? In New York,
he's at least started before,
but he didn't look good either. Throughout training camp, I don't think in the preseason, so I don't see why they would bench Dan. I'm surprised that Daniel Jones has the best odds, I guess.
I think my bet would be Will Levis, even with it just being Mason Rudolph behind. I mean, right now, they technically have good weapons. Like, they spent money on weapons. Like, DeAndre Hopkins had a nice year last year.
Tyler Boyd.
They spent money on their weapons, and Will Levis can't get it to any of them. He's just he's like Superman fumbling the ball every game. There's no way a man that careless with the football is keeping his job all year.
And
no,
as you said, the coach has called him out publicly.
Yes.
Multiple times.
It's not his it's his quarterback, but it's not the guy he drafted, so it's easy for him to do that. Because he knows his job is not actually tied to Levis. If Levis, at the end of the season, they're either drafting or trading or signing at a quarterback. Will Levis is not the starting quarterback next year.
No.
This, of course, we're talking about, will he get benched midseason? Because the backup is Rudolph, I don't know. If it happens, it might be week 10 or 11. Does any quarterback, I guess that's the question too. Before week 10, we're in week 3 now, does another quarterback get benched? I think the answer is yes as well.
I think at least Daniel Jones or Will Levis, one of those guys, isn't making it to week 10.
Will Levis seems more in jeopardy. Will Levis seems even more in jeopardy, even though their backup is Drew Lock and is a much better backup than Mason Rudolph.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you.
I think Brian Callahan can only take so much more, I guess. If he hasn't done it yet to this point, and he said what he said, just wait for another one or two games if Will Levis is making these decisions. And then
Titans play Malik Willis and the Packers.
Former Titans, great.
Malik Willis. It's a revenge game for Malik Willis, man. There it is.
Hey, he actually got asked about that. He's like, nah, man.
LaFleur, we said, he should basically be coach of the year if he turns Malik Willis into something. They won with Malik Willis, but it was 260 yards. Just great game plan. 260 yards on the ground with Josh Jacobs and their backup, Marshawn Lloyd, who got hurt and now I guess is out for a while. But
And Jordan Love didn't go on IR, right? So they...
Right. No, Jordan Love is actually, there's a chance, according to reports, there's a chance he could start this week.
But why even start him this week?
Wait, he's practicing this week.
Hold him. You're playing the Titans this week. Hold him out one more week. One more week. You got a long haul of a season.
Somebody said bench Joe Burrow. I don't think
so. No, he gets hurt eventually if that happens. Like, that's one of his, you don't have to bench him.
So that obviously would be, your bet would be voided. If you said Will Levis, Will Levis and he got hurt, it would just be voided.
Correct. Because you're not getting benched. Per se, right? You're
hurt. Just lost your job because you got hurt.
You know?
Okay.
Because somebody else will get hurt this year.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. It's the NFL.
We're talking about a guy to lose his
starting quarterback's going to get hurt and miss a game or two. I mean, that's just, you hope it's not your guy, but that absolutely is going to happen. All right. Coming up next, thinking of injuries, unfortunately, we know one happened that has really had major ramifications for the Royals. And one thing that Mel Kiper is out there saying this morning that makes no sense.